Shrink Wrap Radio number 472, The Transformative Power of Metaphor, with Dr. Kim Hermanson.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today, my guest is Dr. Kim Hermanson, who is a coach, author, intuitive, and adjunct faculty at Pacifica Graduate Institute, and we'll be discussing her work with the uses of metaphor. For more information about Dr. Kim Hermanson, please see our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. One of today's sponsors is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shrink. And before we go to the interview, I want to let all you professionals know that our strategic partner, the Jung Platform, has created CE courses from selected Shrink Wrap Radio interviews on topics such as dreams, relationships, synchronicity, trauma, and more. Go to www.jungplatform.com to see the latest courses. Now, here's today's interview. Dr. Kim Hermanson, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and I really appreciate this opportunity to speak with you. I heard you do a presentation on this topic for the Depth Psychology Alliance, and right away I said to myself, I've got to have her on Shrink Wrap Radio. So again, I say welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to talk to somebody who's also excited. You know, it makes a good conversation.
So, it does. Yeah. It does help. So one of the things that stood out for me in that other presentation is what an interesting background you have. So let's start out with that.
Okay. So I grew up in the Midwest from what I would consider to be a very conservative family.
Norwegian stock, which makes me think of Lake Wobegon. Makes me think of Lake Wobegon.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yep. Very sweet and very conservative as far as I was concerned. And I think I need to emphasize that because I feel sometimes that I'm really on this outer level of social change with my work. And I did not grow up in a family that would have thought that I would be doing what I'm doing today.
Exactly.
So,
yes.
Yeah, it's just always a surprise. But my family valued education very highly, but science. And so my sister became a physician, and my brother an engineer, and I became a computer scientist. And in my mid 20s, I was working for a large Fortune 500 company in downtown Chicago, and I took a weekend trip with my boyfriend at the time, and that night we were in a very, very bad accident, which changed the course and direction of my life. We were in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and a car crossed the center line and hit us head on. And because of the force of the impact and the way I was sitting in the car, I was critically injured. I broke T12, and my spinal cord was displaced by 40 degrees. And the volunteer paramedics came and took me to the local county hospital, and then I was eventually airlifted to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, where I was given less than 5% chance of walking again. And that something so dramatic, it does change the course of your life. And I also, looking back on it, I've realized that that was my first experience with metaphor, because that night of the accident, I was in a tremendous amount of pain and traumatized and scared and, you know, facing the prospect of not being able to walk again because I knew my back was broken.
Oh, yes. I just freshly read that account in your book, and it's difficult to read. I mean, boy, what a traumatic accident.
Yeah, it really was, and I was so lucky. I was so lucky. And I think, you know, those big things that happen, they're probably destiny on some level, because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today if that accident hadn't have happened.
Yeah. So I kind of interrupted you mid-story, and I think you were about to tell about this intervention that a nurse made in the midst of all your pain.
Yeah. So she came over and she whispered in my ear and told me to imagine that I was floating on a cloud. And that made all the difference for me. I closed my eyes and I imagined that I was floating on a cloud. And in order to float on a cloud, your body has to be very light. And it just put me into a place of peace and relaxation. And I was able to get through that night. I was able to get through the night, and it was amazing. And so that was my first experience with metaphor, and how we can, it just takes an instant to close your eyes and shift into a different space very simply.
What a brilliant intervention that was by that nurse. And
yeah.
I have heard elsewhere that people who are in extremis, you know, due to the trauma of an accident or war or something like that, are more suggestible than normal, more receptive to hypnotic suggestions, and so in a way, that's kind of what she did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made all the difference, and it was so simple, and that was the profoundness and the beauty is, you know, it's not some complicated thing of breathing in a certain way or something. Just close your eyes and imagine you're floating on a cloud. It's so simple.
So you say that accident changed the course of your life. How so?
Well, it gave me quite a long time to recover from the accident and time to think about what I really wanted to do with my life, because computer science wasn't really something that my heart was choosing. And I decided that what lit me up was education and learning, and I wanted to know how adults learned in life. And so I ended up applying to the PhD program at the University of Chicago and becoming a PhD student there after the accident. So, and that would never have happened without the car accident, without the intervention of the car accident.
Now, I have to say it's quite a tribute that you got accepted into a PhD program at the University of Chicago, because, you know, that's one of the premier institutions in this country. As a matter of fact, I applied to go there as an undergraduate, and they actually sent somebody to my house. They sent an alumnus to my house who interviewed me. I didn't get in. So my hat's off to you that not only did you get in, but you got into a PhD program, and your advisor was Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, the author of Flow and all those other books. So color me impressed, very impressed.
You know, I have to say, I'm thinking about being, you know, that I would be talking to you this morning and reflecting on the whole PhD experience. I was in a different, I was in the education department, and he was in the psychology department. And so we were in two different departments, and he didn't know me, and I'd never taken any classes from him. And I was interested in how adults learn, and education, after I found out, after I entered the program, is basically the study of schooling. And I wasn't interested in schooling. I wanted to know how social change happens. How do we learn in life? How does that whole process happen? And so I was studying, at the time I was studying local school reform in Chicago, because that's the big thing that was happening there, and that is related to social change, because there was these local school councils that were composed of community members and parents and teachers, and it was really sort of reinvigorating the whole sort of political climate in Chicago at the time. And so that was interesting to me. And so I was studying those local school councils as a dissertation, possible PhD dissertation. And then my father died unexpectedly. He was only 57. I was 31. It was very sad. I was very, very close to my dad, and I didn't expect him to die at the age of 57. And so I'm working my way through this dissertation proposal, and I just set it aside, and I put it aside for several, maybe it was a couple months, I don't remember now, But when I came back to it, I realized I was only going to, if I was going to be in this PhD program and if I was going to graduate, I was only going to do the thing that most lit me up. Where, you know, where is that? Because I was just feeling sort of dragged down by the whole adult education literature. It was very dry. And so I wrote some sort of article on what I thought about learning in everyday life. It was maybe a couple pages or something. And I gave it to Mike Csikszentmihalyi, and he didn't know who I was, you know, of course, but he reads it and it causes him to be interested enough to talk to me because, of course, he's very busy and he's surrounded with a ton of graduate students and I'm in a different department. Why should he care, you know, about me? And so, you know, I have to say, I think my father dying was the reason why I ended up being able to have Mike Csikszentmihalyi as my advisor. So,
Yeah. Now, I guess jumping ahead, well, where do you want to go from there?
Well, you know, the story that I always tell after, about this is that I loved graduate school, loved it, and it was wonderful to be able to have Mike Csikszentmihalyi as my advisor. And after I graduated, I was fried. I couldn't. It was just way too many words for me. I had fried out my left brain. I felt nauseous looking at anything, literature, books, even the back of a cereal box. The words would just sort of swim in front of me.
I'm laughing here because when around the time that I was finishing up, I started to have this fantasy of becoming a mailman. To just and it was very... It was very a sort of idealistic vision of being a mailman, being outdoors and, you know, delivering mail to people's homes and developing friendly relations with them and so on. It didn't happen. It was just a fantasy, but
yeah.
I can relate to being fried.
Sometimes, you know, we need, when we have such intense experiences, we really need the opposite experience to counter balance it in a way and to get back to some sort of center point, I think.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with me. I couldn't read anything. I was in Berkeley, California at the time, and I decided to become a student there at the Berkeley Psychic Institute and give psychic readings, which I thought was, you know, I was kind of throwing away the conservatism of I felt like what my background was and just doing something really wacky, but it turned out...
Now, whoa, here. Yeah. That's a big jump because we went from
a
Wisconsin girl from a conservative, scientifically oriented family. How do you... There must have been some experiences that you had in between or during the experience in Chicago and now... quotes, giving psychic readings. I mean, that sounds like a big jump.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like a big jump, but I think I was probably always interested in new thoughts and new ideas. You know, my interest in life is how adults learn, and I was really looking for whatever I could find that was interesting to me that would help me piece together how we really learn in life. You know, and at the time, most of the material, except for the social change literature I read in graduate school, most of the literature just seemed really dry, you know, about, well, we have experiences in life, and then we reflect on them, and we observe, and, you know, just this whole scientific method of,
right.
of learning or something, and it really didn't fit. I didn't feel like it fit. There wasn't... And I think the work with metaphor is so much about the feeling sense. I wasn't feeling inspired. And I think I kept, after my PhD, I kept looking for what would inspire me. What, you know, that's what we want in life. We want to live. We want to be inspired and,
right.
and create and, you know.
So you were in Berkeley and maybe somehow you discovered the Berkeley Psychic Institute, or, you know, how did that happen?
Yeah, somehow, I have no idea how I ended up.
Did you take some classes there?
I took classes and I gave readings there.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I noticed when I was giving the readings that I wasn't predicting people's future. What I was doing was dropping down to a deeper level into this feeling sense of metaphor and reading metaphorically what I would call their creative process. So I might say, you know, you're walking through muck right now, but it looks like you're going to have higher ground, or there's a wall over your head. You know, maybe you need to see if you can move around that. Or, you know, I was looking at their process metaphorically, in very simple metaphoric language.
Uh-huh. Do you think that metaphor somehow taps into what might be innate psychic capabilities somehow?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I would call myself a psychic because I can see things that we don't traditionally, you know, we're not taught to see, I guess, or in a culture and schooling.
What's an example?
Well, I could see somebody's wall, or I could see them in the muck. I could see the picture of that. But what this work is it's really about the feeling dimension. It's really about feeling, and everybody has the capacity to feel. We use that way of learning and knowing all the time. Whenever we're in a situation where we don't know what to do next, or, you know, even where should I live? You know, we walk into one house, what does that feel like? We walk into a different one. Oh, I feel better in that house. You know, I don't know why, but I like that one better. You know, we use that feeling sense all the time. It's an ancient way of learning and knowing. Mm-hmm. And that's what metaphor is really connecting us with. And so it's heart wisdom. Personally, a hundred years ago or more, Rudolf Steiner said that the greatest challenge of the coming age of humanity would be to allow the heart to teach us to think in a new way. And to me, this is heart wisdom. And I don't have the academic research behind. I know lots of people have done work in the Heart Math Institute and all that, and how the heart actually has a mind, but. The work with metaphor really gets us down into that feeling dimension. It's not about analyzing images. It's about feeling our way through the creative process of life.
Okay. And then later, I guess you had another period of needing to get away from your left brain. Because I was interested to learn that as part of your process, you spent some time in the wilds of northwestern Montana because you really needed some time getting back, not only to nature, but to your most natural self. And this stood out to me, I guess, because I got my master's degree at the University of Montana in Missoula. So at any rate, maybe you can tell us how your time in Montana contributes to your work with metaphor.
Yeah. You know, I loved Montana. Just the stark natural beauty and the intense, huge mountains. Growing up in the Midwest, you know, it was just like, whoa. It was just, I didn't think that I would ever leave Montana. I loved it. It's just, you know, wild, primitive, untamed. I would, you know, encounters with bears and hearing the wolves at night. It was just magical for me. And to me, what it did was it connected with me with the creative at a very deep level. In northwest Montana, where I was living, which is a couple of miles from the Canadian border, there's a small town up there called Eureka, and then I was living on 200 acres south of there for a while. But I went up there. The first day I went up there was to visit a friend, and I went to a party the very first day I was there, and they don't have building codes up in that area, so people made their own homes out of just materials that they found, and all these different odd shapes and sizes. And it was so fun. And inside at the party, people were playing music and singing, and outside there was a drumming circle, and I just was in heaven. This is great, you know. And the other thing that happened was, for a while, when I was living by myself on the 200 acres, things would happen, and when I lived in a city, if something, a issue came along, like, a flat tire or something, there's people available. And up there, I had a couple situations where one day, a bird got trapped in my window, between my two window panes, and I couldn't, like, run out to get help. I had to figure this out on my own.
Oh, yeah.
And there was another thing that happened similar to that with a dog, actually. The dog got its his eyelid caught in a barbed wire fence, and
I had
no one to help me. I didn't know if I was actually going to be able to get it taken care of without totally damaging the dog's eye or not. And you know, so when you're sort of in a place where there was, it's really wild and amazingly creative people, and being in a place where I couldn't just pick up the phone or ask somebody to help me, I had, you know, you're kind of have your own resources when you're in a more remote area. All those things. I loved Montana. It was great.
Yeah. And so did you feel like living in the wild like that was getting you closer to that third, what do you refer to it as, a third sense or third way of being?
You know, I think it probably was because of the whole connected nature primal place.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd spent so many years in my head, you know, with the science education and then being a computer scientist and then 7 years in the PhD program. I just like so many years of my life in my head, and I needed to get back into that body, sensory, wild place.
Now, later you end up teaching a course on the psychology of metaphor. Where was that?
That was at Meridian University.
Okay, and they're located where?
They are in Petaluma.
Okay, yeah, I know them, actually.
Yeah,
I want to make sure we're talking about the same place.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they used to be, at the time I was teaching there, they were called the Institute of Imaginal Studies.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. What a small world. So tell us a bit about the course that you taught on the psychology of metaphor, and I think that sent you scurrying, looking for sources and so on.
Yeah. So I was sitting in this interview with AFTAB, Omer, the president of the school, and he, after a few minutes of talking to me, he said, well, rather than try to fit you into our roster, why don't you tell us what you would like to teach? And mm-hmm. the word metaphor just flew out of my mouth, and the only association I had with metaphor was years before when I had done those psychic readings, and I realized, oh, that's interesting. I'm speaking in metaphor here when I'm talking to these clients. But that was the only association. I had no academic training in what the psychology of metaphor would be look like, or my whole background was in teaching and learning, and I thought I'd be teaching some course about teaching and learning. But he picked right up on it. The word metaphor just flew out of my mouth, and he picked right up on it and said, great, we'll call it the psychology of metaphor. And the course was going to start in a couple months, and I didn't even know where to begin. And, you know, I'm not a psychologist by training. I'm an educator by training as well. So I really had a wide open playing field for me, which was actually really great, because you can be much more creative when you don't feel constrained by anything. And since Spirit was speaking through me, Spirit actually helped develop the class for me. I used to, when I lived in Marin County, I used to like to go to the San Francisco Graduate Theological Union Library, and it's a small library at the top of a high hill in San Anselmo, and they had these big, long tables there, and I would sit down at one of the tables to work on my, class, and I'd look up from what I was doing, and there, just a couple feet from me, would be a book on the psychology of metaphor that had been out of print for a long time. And, you know, it's just odd the way these books would show up.
Yes.
And the first one that I came across was by Martin Foss. It was published in 1949. It was called Symbol and Metaphor in Human Experience. And it was an amazing book. It really gave, to me, it brought together my interest in learning on one hand and the creative on the other. It brought them together. And he writes in the book about how the creative process is the deep source of life itself. And the metaphor is the heart of that. So that was one. And then I also came across Romanitions, an article that he had published in an edited volume back in 1981. And of course, George Lakoff's Metaphors We Live By. I was very, very blown away by that book as well, because his work with metaphor that he's been doing with for 40 years really takes us into some profound, as far as I'm concerned, very profound places.
So did you end up developing exercises for the course that you were teaching to make it experiential?
Yeah, I'm very much into experiential, very much, yep. So, I mean, it's been years now since I taught that first class, and I can't even remember specific exercises. Well, actually, no, now one's coming to mind. Are you asking because you want to hear about something I might have done in the course?
Well, sure, just, you know, we're just exploring whatever is of interest to you.
Yeah. So here's something. What we're working with here with metaphor is the imagination. And so we want to get to a place where our mind isn't trying to, it doesn't have some meaty material to try to figure out, you know, because we want to get to our place where our mind is confused. And so one of the things that I did with the class was I had them pair up and have a partner, and one person would speak in gibberish to the other, and the other person would just sit and hear this gibberish. And sometimes they tried to get, you know, too slick with it and try to figure out, like, ESP, like, what are they really saying?
Yeah.
But I told the person that was speaking gibberish, you're just speaking gibberish. You're not trying to communicate anything. You're just speaking gibberish. And listening to gibberish would put these students into a place, the metaphoric realm, where they would get visions and they would get words or feeling sense, where things would come. It would put them into that third space, that third dimension.
Wow.
And so that was one of the things.
A fascinating, fascinating idea.
Yeah.
It makes me think of the famous hypnotist Milton Erickson, who developed the whole idea of confusion techniques as a way of getting people into a hypnotic state. And it sounds like that's pretty much exactly what you were doing.
Yeah, because our minds can be so busy, you know, and they want to be thinking, and so we want to get to a place, a different place. We don't want to be in that place of trying to figure things out.
Yeah, you say people sometimes ask you, what's the difference between a regular image? I'm not sure what a regular image is, and a metaphoric image. So I'll ask you that here.
Yeah, you know, the metaphoric images, for me, they're alive, they're awake, they have something that they want to say, there's an energy about them that you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
I did a class a week or two ago, and somebody was sharing a very complex dream that I, you know, she was in it, and maybe her mother and brother, and I don't know, just all kinds of different characters and things happening. And so I asked her, you know, what is the most potent image in that dream for you? And she couldn't say, because it was so meaningful with all these different people and complex in a way too. And it was so apparent to me, there was a lightning bolt in the dream, and that lightning bolt had so much energy. I could feel it. And so I, with the work with metaphor, I had her step into being the lightning bolt.
Uh-huh.
And feeling what it felt like to be the lightning bolt. So to, you know, in that example, the metaphoric image would be the lightning bolt. It had something to say. It had an intensity. It wanted her to feel something new. It wanted her to have a shift.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the difference between an analogy and a metaphor?
Well, an analogy would be something like, if we said, like, Ted is like a freight train. So on one hand we have Ted, and on the other hand we have freight train, and they're separate. They're two separate things, and there might be some similarities between the two, but our mind is still is very happy because we have, you know, Ted on one side and freight train on the other. But if we said Ted is a freight train, that takes us into the metaphoric realm, because that doesn't make sense. And so we're working with metaphoric material here. We're working with Ted being a freight train, and what does that feel like for Ted to be a freight train, and our imaginations, our metaphoric capacity, our innate ability to process metaphor that's very ancient, that we all have, takes us to a place where it's true. Ted is a freight train.
Yeah. In your writing, you've talked about the role of metaphor in scientific discovery, and you've given a lot of good examples. I wonder if any of those come to mind now.
Yeah. You know, they're all over, and it's just amazing when you look at the whole computer technology and how that's just filled with metaphoric images everywhere. You know, just having a desktop on your computer or cloud technology. The physicist Niels Bohr, his work with the atomic structure and quantum theory, it was inspired by the metaphor of cubism and cubist paintings. So yeah, it's all over. And the reason is because whenever scientists or any of us are trying to introduce a new idea into our culture, we have to draw on metaphor. We don't have words for it yet. We're in that murky creative terrain where we have to drop down to that feeling sense and use metaphor. And in the case of every historic scientific discovery and invention that was researched carefully enough, we find that it was metaphoric imagery that produced the breakthrough for it. It's the place of our new creative ideas.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I think there are many cases where somebody has something come to them from the metaphoric realm, whether it's a vision, an image, or whatever. And then they may have to spend years toiling in the scientific method, if you will, to give birth to that thing that was initially just kind of sensed very intuitively.
Yes, and isn't that amazing when you think about it? Because that initial sense that you don't really, it's so vague and you don't really have anything to go on, but it inspires years of work.
Yeah.
And that is amazing. It's just like the level of energy and profoundness of this dimension. I mean, it brings forth such amazing work from people, that somebody would spend their entire lives just going on some sort of vague feeling sense about something.
Yeah. And you've observed that our culture is riddled with metaphors, but often they're underground or we're not conscious of them, and some of them maybe are healthy and others are not so healthy. Are there any examples that come to mind?
Yeah. Metaphor is something, it's a lens that all of us look through. That's why it's applicable. It's not just for scientists. It's not for the big culture. It's everybody. We're all living our lives through metaphoric lenses, whether we see big space ahead of us or we feel closed down. You know, we're all living in that metaphoric realm, and it comes out in our language. And the example I gave in the lecture was, years ago, I was at the Social Change Conference, and the keynote speaker was talking about his work in the Amazon rainforest, protecting the Amazon rainforest, and it was so clear in his talk that his primary metaphor that was guiding his work was war. He was at war with the large corporations and the others that were plundering the rainforest. And to me, that would be an example, and somebody could argue against this, but to me, war is an example of a metaphor that's not so healthy, because when we're at war with something, we're in resistance to it. There's no ability to be creative with that. There's not an expansiveness in that place. We need to reach for metaphors, and this realm gives us that are opening and expansive and that move us into new terrain and open up our work. So that's an example of one that I feel is not so effective for creative work.
I think some people have even raised that objection in that we are prone to talk about fighting cancer or, fighting a bad habit or an illness. And that there are other ways, other kinds of metaphors that, as you say, are more expansive that might lead in a more healing kind of direction.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that's so amazing about the creative process is that it's always wanting to move in the most expansive, generative way possible. We're not stuck. We're not, we all have our own life journeys, our own life paths, but our creative process is always wanting to move us and open us up into bigger, new terrain. That's the process of life that we're in. It's about growth.
Yeah. Now, you talk about metaphor as being a portal to another realm, and I forget the expression that you use. You said it's a third, it opens up a third, what?
I probably said third space.
A third space.
Yeah.
What are the first two spaces, by the way?
Well, you know, I think the first two spaces would probably be the linear world that we're living in, and that there's another dimension that we don't see, but it's under the surface. And, you know, back when I was teaching that first psychology of metaphor class, it caused me to look at the world differently. I was reading this literature, and I was looking around me saying, there's beauty that we cannot see. How can I see it? I want to see that beauty. And a couple months after the class ended, I had a very profound visionary experience where I was shown that realm, and it was urgently shown to me and made known to me that this would be my life's work, is to open up this dimension. And I would call it a dimension. I would call it the feeling dimension. And the work, it really... It's not some new age woo. I mean, again, I'm the last person that I thought would ever be talking about opening up another realm or another dimension. I mean, given my conservative background, and I'm naturally very introverted and all that. But there's so many wise men that have talked about how problems aren't solved at their own level. We need to shift into a different space in order to solve our bigger issues or social problems or whatever. I mean, Carl Jung, he talked about all the most fundamental problems of life aren't solved at their own level. What happens is that we move beyond them. And Albert Einstein said, you know, we can't solve a problem at the level of thinking of the problem. You know, we shift into a different place. We have a bigger terrain available to us, and then we see things differently. And that's what this work does. It helps us see and feel things differently.
Yeah, related to that, you said that simple images can be more powerful than complex ones. Can you say a bit about that?
Yeah, well, complex images take us into our minds in analyzing the image, and simple images give us a way to be able to step into them and feel them. I did a class last week, and, you know, I had one person, for example. It was a very complicated image of a sandwich that didn't have crust on it, and it was in the side of a plastic container that you would buy in a grocery store, and then the container did something, and then it became into outer space, and it zoomed around outer space, and, you know, this was a long story. And then, you know, but a simple image would be, I'm a lotus flower, or I'm a daffodil, or I'm the ocean, I'm the water. You know, just, and
yes.
What we want to do is we want a feeling sense. We want the feeling sense. If the water shows up for you, if the ocean shows up in a session or in a class, it has something potent that it wants you to feel. It wants you to feel what it's like to be so expansive as the ocean.
Yeah.
The gentleness, the beauty of the water. That feeling sense is what is transformative. Feeling is what connects us to the creative forces of the universe. So, you know, when we have these long, complicated images with lots of characters and people and, you know, things happening, and we're not getting to a feeling sense. We're getting into our minds being really happy because we have some complicated thing in front of us, but we're not getting to that feeling dimension of metaphor.
Yeah, another good example is the one you gave us about the dream that you were working with that had all these different elements in it, but you kind of zeroed in on the lightning bolt as having the most energy and potential feeling in it, and that turned out to be fruitful. You say that images or metaphors can be very helpful to us in solving real-life problems. Are there examples that come to mind, either from your own life or with others that you've worked with?
Yeah. You know, I'll give a couple of examples from my own life. Two or three years ago, I was realizing that I needed to use my time better, and what showed up in a, I call them doorway sessions when I work with people individually and I do my own doorway sessions. What showed up for me was that I was a fruit tree and I was in full fruit production mode. And if I, and this fruit tree, you know, as all fruit trees, they have cycles of life, and they're only in fruit producing mode for a certain amount of time, and then the fruit is done. It's finished. And I realized that if I didn't harvest my fruit as well as I could and get it to the people who needed it, I was going to be wasting that fruit. And again, you know, it has a satisfying element as far as our minds being able to understand it, but the shift comes in feeling it. I could feel, wow, this is my time. This is my time where I need to be, you know, using my time as well as possible so that my fruit is not wasted. So that's one example. I could give others if you'd like to hear them, but yeah.
Okay, one more.
One more, okay. So this happened just fairly recently. I think it was maybe a month ago or so. I was in a place where I knew I was in change, but I wasn't sure what the change was going to look like. And I was very, as we all get, we, you know, get very attached to the places and people in our lives. And I tuned in and I saw, you know how like the first astronaut went to the moon and they put a flag down because they're marking their new territory. And then they turn and they go back to the spacecraft and they head back to planet Earth. And I saw, I didn't see this as a planet. I saw this as a new territory, like a new land. But I saw myself putting a flag down that I had discovered a new land, and I was now ready to turn and walk away because I put my flag down. I had discovered and explored that new territory, and now it was ready. It was time for me to go on to my next adventure or my mm-hmm. next place or whatever. And that was very clarifying for me. To receive that image, the feeling sense of putting a flag down and realizing I've done it, I've done this now. So that was another example. Most of my images, I have to say, because I tune in all the time, of course, I work with this realm all day long. Most of my images are very much simpler than that. I usually get just even a line or a square or a circle or ground or space. Something very, very simple, because again, as I said, it's just a feeling sense that we're going for here. There's no complexity that's needed. So most of the time when I tune in, I get something very, very simple.
Yeah. Now, I believe you've also spoken about a relationship between metaphor and prayer. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, I don't study prayer. However, I mentioned that because Greg Braden had written a book called The Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer, and that was fascinating to me because he's studied like ancient Essenes and gone through all these ancient texts about how there's a lost form of prayer that's about feeling. And I do believe that metaphor, I mean, it's ancient. It's an ancient way of learning and knowing that the earliest humans didn't have verbal language. They were communing in that feeling sense way with the world around them. And so, feeling is how we connect with the creative forces of the universe. And, for example, the law of attraction says that for us to manifest something new, we need to feel what it's like to have it. And metaphor is what allows us to do that. It allows us to feel and be that new place, that new person, that new whatever that we're moving into. It gives us the feeling before we have it in our life.
Uh-huh. Now, you've developed a sort of private practice. You're not licensed as a psychotherapist or a counselor, so it's not exactly psychotherapy or counseling. And you just referred to it as doorways. Tell us, and clearly doorway is a metaphor. Tell us about your practice, you know, kind of what you do, how people find out about it, where you see it going.
Yeah. You know, I call them doorway sessions, and it really is about helping people shift into seeing things differently. And to be able to get to deep clarity, you know, as I said before, like our minds can't figure things out. What we need to do is shift into a place where we're seeing and feeling and getting a deeper sense of clarity about things. And so the sessions, you know, I guess I could consider myself to be a coach or you know, I'm working with the creative process, so I have a lot of people that are highly creative that come to me, and they might be working on creative projects, because at the heart of every creative project is a metaphoric image. I love working with novelists because you can get into the characters, and the characters actually speak in the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're looking underneath the surface, and it could be life issues, marriage issues, relationships, work issues. We're working with the creative process in doorway sessions and with individual people's creative fire and where it wants to go and where it wants to open up. I've had amazing experiences with clients and amazing breakthroughs with people in my sessions.
How do people find you?
They could go to my website, kimhermanson.com, www.kimhermanson.com.
Yeah. So would you like to illustrate your doorway process with me now? I'm willing to be a guinea pig if it's something that listeners might be able to follow along with and experience for themselves, and it doesn't go on too long because I don't want to tax them, but do you think
yeah.
you might be able to have a taste of it here?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to do that. When I tell my clients, you can start with nothing, or you could bring something in that you want to get insight around. And so for you, Dave, you don't necessarily need to tell me what your question is, because what we're doing is we're going underneath the surface. But if you have something that you'd like to get an opening around or insight on, you might want to just bring it to mind.
I can share a little bit. I'm dealing with a situation where a member of my family has a very difficult to diagnose neurological medical condition that's been very disabling, and so it raises issues of how what my mode of being and can be around that and what I can do and can't do and so on.
Yeah, I can understand that. That would be a good question to ask. So let's just have you close your eyes for a moment.
I already have.
Okay, that's a good client. and so the listeners at home, if you have something that you want to ask about, you could just do this process with us, and it will just take a few minutes. So basically, what this, as I said, metaphor is very body oriented, and so we're getting into a feeling sense here. And I'm going to just let you start. Let's just start by having you focus your attention on the top of your head, just for right now. We're just going to start there. We're going to tune into our body for a moment. So just start at the top of your head. And imagine that you have a center pole of light, and there's a magnet at the bottom of the center pole of light. And it's gradually taking your attention down past your forehead, past your eyebrows, past your eyes, past your nose, past your mouth, past your throat. And your attention is coming to rest in the center of your chest cavity. Just notice what it feels like to hang out in the middle of your chest cavity. And then let yourself drop down into the deepest source of wisdom inside of yourself. It could be your heart, it could be your solar plexus, wherever. And we're not pushing for anything, we're just allowing ourselves to rest down into a deeper source of wisdom.
Well, I got an image actually right away.
Okay.
And
that happens to people.
And I always think of myself as not, well, I have in the past, let's say, thought of myself as not easily accessing these things. But actually, I think that's an old that's an old story. I'm letting go of it. And the image I got was of a tree. And my first reaction to the tree was some feeling of, well, geez, I don't want to be as rigid as a tree in this situation. But then I'm realizing that the tree has branches, and the branches can, they have some flexibility. They can move with the wind, and they can change and be adaptable to external conditions. And then as you kind of went on and used the imagery of going down, it kind of spoke to me about the roots of this tree. And so what that says to me is I want to tap into the deepest places of wisdom as I move through this situation. I want to be firm and solid like a tree, but I also want to draw from deep wellsprings and resources, and I want to have the flexibility that's inherent in the image of the limbs. And maybe leaves too. And maybe leaves too, which would be like new growth for me that can come out of this.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, right away your mind, because this happens with everyone or lots of people anyway, we'll get an image and then our mind will view it negatively. But when we really tune into the feeling sense of it, we can see, oh, this is really bringing me something here. And the tree is amazing. I mean, it's just, it's an amazing source of life and its ability, roots ability to reach down into that nurturing ground, as you said, and then the ability for the branches to float and be with the wind.
Yeah, I really like this image. I'll try to hang on to it for a while and live with it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just as we close out this little tiny little 5-minute session that we did together on the tree, I'd like to have us end with the feeling sense with this tree. Like, where with this tree, we're stepping into being the tree now.
Okay.
We're stepping into being the tree. I am the tree.
Okay. I am the tree.
Yeah, and just what, you know, and I know you gave so many examples of the beautiful feelings that came, and I'm just wanting us to just spend another moment lingering in that feeling sense of being the tree and seeing if anything else wants to show up for you with this tree image, as you are the tree, the rooted tree.
Well, I have a sense of fluids that come up, you know, from below, and it kind of move through me. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, and I guess those fluids are energy and life-giving.
And it's very regenerative.
And as a tree, I guess I can provide shade to this family member.
Another thing that's interesting about it is that the tree is so solid and rooted, and it really has its own, it's in its own space in a way. So the image you said at the end about being able to provide shade, it can give to others in that way, but it can't move out of itself. It has, you know, it's its own thing. It's its own being.
Yeah, and I have a good feeling about that. I have a feeling of I guess strength and solidity in myself that I can draw on or is part of my essence.
Yes, and that other people can see as and be gifted by because they can see it in you. So for the listeners, and another thing that you could do as well, Dave, but if people wanted to go further with their own images, they could get out a piece of paper and just write, I am the, and whatever image came, and see what the image wants to say to them.
Yeah, good suggestion. And I hope those who were driving cars didn't close their eyes.
Right.
Exactly. We didn't say that, but I trust my listeners to be smart enough to figure that out. We should mention that, you know, your book, Getting Messy, A Guide to Taking Risks and Opening the Imagination for Teachers, Trainers, Coaches, and Mentors, and I'll put a link to that in the interview. And I believe you're working on a new book. You sent me a chapter, as a matter of fact, which I read, and that's what put me so much in touch with the trauma. What do you have a title for the new book, and what can you tell us about it?
No, there's no title yet. I'm still in the process of bringing it together. But yeah, I'm very excited about it, and it brings together metaphor, the creative process, and really the immense beauty of this realm that so urgently wants to be known and wants us to know it. And
well, I'm sure you'll be tuning in to a lot of metaphor and imagery as the birth of this book happens, and a title will come to you.
Yeah, for me, the titles are always the last thing. So.
Uh-huh. Sometimes I've heard from other authors, sometimes the title to their book is like weird and not in good keeping with what I thought their central message was. And what they've shared is that the publisher, you know, the publisher had their own vision, I guess, of what would help it sell.
So, right, exactly.
So hopefully you won't be caught in that dilemma.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Well, as we wind down, is there anything else you'd like to add?
You know, I'm delighted I was able to talk to you. It was really fun. And, you know, I would just say that, you know, it's taken me years to integrate and honor my own experiences of the metaphoric realm, and that I hope that this interview will help other people acknowledge this realm of profound beauty when it shows up in their lives, because I do believe it's another way of learning and knowing, and it needs to be valued and honored, and it's going to open up the creative for all of us to start really honoring this way of learning and knowing.
Well, that's a great close. So, Dr. Kim Hermanson, thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks for having me. Yep, it was fun.
I'm glad I decided to invite Kim to use me as a guinea pig for her doorways process. I thought it would be a good addition for you, the listener. At the same time, I wasn't sure I'd be able to get into it or not. I'm happy to report that I did. I had not rehearsed an issue and just went ahead with the first thing that came up in the session. The image of the tree came in loud and clear before she had finished giving me the instructions. I hope you noticed me modeling, catching myself in the process of almost playing an old and no longer needed tape. I'm referring to the moment in which I almost said something along the lines of, I'm not good at visualization. Then I hope you noticed me catching myself just as it was about to come out. It was a bit of mindfulness at work. I realized that I didn't need to bias myself, her, or the session with that old piece of negative self-perception. I realized in that moment that perception is old baggage and really doesn't fit anymore. It felt good to catch myself in full stride as I was about to say something habitual that no longer applies. Hallelujah! Also, by putting aside all such self-doubt, I was really able to get into the exercise and have something quite genuine happen in the moment. So thank you, Kim, and thank you, Higher Self. So once again, the title of Dr. Kim Hermanson's book is Getting Messy, A Guide to Taking Risks and Opening the Imagination. If you would like to order it and at the same time help to support Shrink Wrap Radio, please go to our site and click on the Amazon.com banner ad that you'll see in the right-hand sidebar.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lara Just. I'm a qualified therapist in London, and I'm also just about to embark on a very exciting postgraduate research about therapists' use of client-generated metaphors. Next to this, I also work as a mind-body practitioner, coach, nutritionist, and change manager at a big NHS London hospital. I decided to support the work of Dr. Dave because his podcast has been a staple nourishment, so to speak, for me throughout the past year or more. It's been so relevant for me and my training and personal development. I just love listening to one of his latest podcasts, especially while on a run along the river. I really enjoy Dr. Dave's way of engaging so personably with his interviewees, some of the most exquisite speakers in the field from around the world. The diversity and variety of topics and speakers really convey Dr. Dave's efforts to give listeners the breadth as well as some depth of knowledge. I also really like that Dr. Dave appears to be so open-minded, bringing in some newer thought models in the holistic and mind-body-spirit fields. For me, the podcast series has been fantastic. And if you think so too, please support Dr. Dave so he can continue with his amazing job. So get onto your smartphones or computer now, go to the Shrink Wrap Radio website and press on the green donate button. Really, it only takes a couple of minutes. Thank you, Dr. Dave. Please keep your podcast going with many more interesting topics and for many more years to come. Lots of love from London.
Thank you, Laura Just. How synchronistic that today's interview is about the transformative power of metaphor and that you're starting a postdoctoral study of metaphor with clients. Totally synchronistic. I hope you'll join Laura if you're not already a financial donor. We do have one new donor since the last episode whose name has been added to the honor roll, and he is Zachary Sandler. So thank you, Zachary, for stepping up to the plate. Do you have a website? If so, you might have experienced what I did a couple of years ago, which was an outside attack on my site. The company that saved my bacon is called Sucuri, and you can find them at sucuri.net, and Sucuri is spelled Sucuri.net. They are the industry leader in security options for websites and blogs. I use them, and you should too. And as an affiliate, we will get a small portion of whatever you spend there. So just go to the Sucuri banner in the left-hand sidebar at shrinkwrapradio.com. And by the way, let me once again call your attention to one of our sponsors in the right-hand sidebar on our site. You'll see an ad for Unflame, an herbal pain remedy designed by Dr. Robert Hedaya, the founder of Whole Psychiatry, and most recently a guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 460. Not only is he a psychiatrist, but he's also trained in psychopharmacology. And he developed this herbal blend to deal with his own back pain, and he was amazed to see how effective it was and decided to make it available to all. And I can tell you that I myself am a satisfied user of this product. So you can save $5 on this. Go to our ad and click on the link in the right-hand sidebar. And there's also a phone number there that you could use if you'd like to call directly to place your order. Now, once again, let me remind you to go to the survey tab on our site to take the updated survey. And finally, any of you who are not already members of Audible.com, my favorite audiobook service, my recommendation today is the Pulitzer Prize-winning All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. It's got close to 15,000 ratings on Audible.com, giving it almost a perfect 5, which is the highest rating. So if you're not already an Audible.com subscriber, you can get this audiobook for free and to keep, with no obligation to continue your subscription, by going to audibletrial.com/shrink. And remember, they've got over 180,000 other titles for you to choose from as well.
Hi, this is Dr. Elisha Goldstein, psychologist, workshop leader, and author, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Dr. Elisha Goldstein, who was my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 440, Mindfulness and Self-Compassion as Tools for Shifting Out of Depression. So now let's take a dip into the old email bag to see what's happening with our listener community. I'll read just one, and it comes from longtime listener and contributor Alan Tabor, who writes, I particularly appreciated the Eric Neumann episode. Neumann's Origins and History of Consciousness was a huge book for me. It discusses the self as essentially an autoregulatory mechanism, and hence combined two of my main influences of the time, Carl Jung and Gregory Bateson's systems theory. Some of Neumann's formulations of how the psyche develops could have as easily been made by Bateson. If you believe, as I do, that we start as a bag of parts, this a result of the culture and learning replacing a lot of what instinct does, and that the parts can conflict with each other and with the culture at all levels, family, tribe, planet, and then the need for a powerful instinct to build, capital S self, is all that keeps us from spinning off in all directions. The self can be viewed as an evolving system. Controversion seeks to bring the individual back to a centered whole by knitting together the parts. Listening, I was looking forward to pointing out the Camilla Paglia paper, but you already did it. Odd where Neumann's influence pops up. I just ordered Neumann's book on Amor and Psyche using your Amazon widget. James Hillman's Revisioning Psychology also uses that myth as a key story for depth psychology, arguing that Jung's central myth, which he terms the hero's night-sea journey, is too narrow. Keep up the good work, and that's signed Al. Well, Al, I seem to recall that I wasn't very clear on what Neumann intended by the term centroversion, and so I do appreciate your clarification and also the general erudition of your observations. And with that, I think we better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site, and you can leave voicemail either using our Shrink Wrap Radio app, about which you can find details in the Apps tab on the site, or on our message phone at 415-830-4014. Thanks to today's guest, Dr. Kim Hermanson, for sharing her work with metaphors and transformation. And my next interview will be with Dr. Jim Kleiger, and we'll be discussing his book, Assessing Psychosis, A Clinician's Guide. I think this will be a learning experience for us all. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long. Just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, babe, it's all in your mind. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.